Welcome to season three of the Inbalance podcast. My name is Jim Simon, and I am the director of sustainability at Gonzaga University. Inbalance animates Gonzaga University's CREATE model for sustainability through interviews and conversations with students, staff, faculty, and community members practicing sustainability on campus and in our region. Season three is a little bit different. This season, we've invited a co-host, Kelsey Solberg. Welcome, Kelsey.
Hello, thank you. Happy to be here.
Good to have you. Yeah. I'm excited to have you as like a co-host. I think it'll be fun. Yes. I'm excited for listeners to get to know someone new.
Yeah, me too. I think it'll hopefully make it dynamic and fun, and I'll try to contribute some good stuff.
I think you will. So just recapping, we've done this podcast for three seasons. And we started, I think, just before COVID. We took a break, came back, did a second season, and then we're starting again this fall. I think we're trying to shake it up a little bit. I think listening to past podcasts, it was kind of repetitive, a lot of questions and answers. And I think we're trying to make it more conversational this year. As evidenced by the fact that I have no script. I'm just talking. You can't tell, but you have to believe me. Kelsey.
Yes.
We'd love to learn more about you. I hear that you might like dogs.
I like dogs some, yes.
Just a little bit?
A little bit, yes. I'm the mother to a sweet golden retriever named Wilson. And then I just stop people on the street to introduce myself to their dogs also. So,
okay. Where did the name Wilson come from?
It came from the volleyball in Castaway. I've gotten some weird people guess Russell Wilson a lot. While I'm a football fan enough, it was more the volleyball. Yeah.
Okay. I was wondering, and maybe a little bit hoping, it came from the fish song Wilson. So like when you call Wilson, you do, I don't know if you're a fish fan, but like that song has a famous kind of call and response in live shows.
Yes. I have a fish head, as they say, friend, who did turn me onto that song specifically because of Wilson. So,
okay.
There, I love it.
There you go. Rumor has it, you also might be into running.
Yes, against my better judgment, I am into running.
Okay.
Yeah. You mentioned earlier about doing running meetings, and I also have one of those with a colleague of mine. And I find that that's the most, we have the best conversations coming out of a run. Like, there's something about moving while you're in conversation that just kind of gets something else going.
I love those meetings. I think because it gets me out of the office. Mm-hmm. And I think my friend and colleague were probably just kind of geared for being outside to best relate to other people. And so it's just really fun. And we just do 2 miles out and 2 miles back on the bluff. And it's funny the habits you get in, like he leads out and I lead back. And I like that because the back is more downhill and I'm a little quieter. So like I have to like kind of project over my shoulder and I'm more confident running downhill and talking. So I feel like I have the better end of the deal.
That is an advantage. Not as winded on the downhill.
Not as winded. Yeah.
Here's a question. Do we do a running episode of this podcast?
Ooh, that would be fun. I think we'd have to get like a giant, one of those umbrella suits that kind of go over you, mm-hmm. like almost like a phone booth umbrella.
Yeah.
And then record it that way so we would avoid the wind.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Avoid the wind, sure. Really accentuate the heavy breathing, I guess.
And that would be the only logistical thing. Definitely, yeah. Only the wind.
Minor details.
Minor details, yeah. Are you ready for some rapid fire questions so yeah. Our listeners can get to know you so well?
I'm ready. Hit me with it.
Okay. Favorite book?
My favorite book as of late is called All We Can Save, and it is an anthology. So it's a number of essays, and it's all written by females who are involved in the climate movement in a variety of capacities. So there's activists, there's politicians, there's mothers, but it's all written from a female perspective, and it's really, really powerful. So highly, highly recommend.
Love it. We read that book as a AmeriCorps team this past summer, and then we're reading it the entire staff this year. So yeah, it's a good pick.
Yes.
Last concert you've been to?
I'm so excited to answer this question.
I figured.
So my favorite band is called Lake Street Dive, and they were supposed to play in Bozeman this last week as part of their tour, but they've been moving all of their concerts to outdoor venues. And the Kettle House Amphitheater is an outdoor venue outside of Missoula, and they moved their show there kind of last minute. So this last Thursday, I went and saw Lake Street Dive at Kettle House in Missoula, and it was phenomenal, per usual.
Nice.
So good.
And that was your first time at the venue?
It was, yeah. It's amazing.
How was it?
It was great. I would compare it sort of size-wise to the Pavilion. But just the setting is so cool. You're like right on the river. It's out of town a little bit, but close enough to Missoula. And yeah, beautiful weather. It was great.
Nice. Did you stop for coffee at Black Coffee?
I didn't. Oh. I go to Market on Front Street, I think is what it's called.
Yeah.
Every time I leave Missoula, I go there and I get a breakfast burrito and a coffee. And I stuck with my routine.
The routine.
Your recommendation. I'm so sorry.
It's okay. I'll forgive you. Favorite restaurant? And there's no caveat here. It could be in Spokane, it could be anywhere, or you could answer both.
Okay. Spokane, I really love Root, which is a vegetarian vegan restaurant next to Rosar's on the South Hill. It's kind of random, but they have an incredible way of making vegetarian dishes taste like meat dishes if you're into that, but then also just making really great, purely vegetarian meals. And they make their own ginger beer, which is also delicious.
That sounds tasty.
Love
it. I know Root is tasty. I don't know why I said it sounds like it's tasty, as if I'd never been there.
Yes. There's
How did you get to work today?
I drove my Subaru Forester here by myself.
At least you're honest.
At least I have that going for me. In my defense, I am house sitting in the valley for my parents. So it would have been quite a long bike commute.
That would have been a long bike commute. Yes. Even though the Centennial Trail essentially gets you to Gonzaga from there.
That is a detail that I'm aware of.
last one. In 2030, Spokane will.
I love this question. I would say in 2030, Spokane will have more small scale agriculture. So more kind of like local farms, urban gardens, so more of our food sourcing coming from local areas rather than regional or industrial agriculture. I hope.
We can hope.
We can hope.
Well, welcome to the podcast and for being the co-host.
So happy to be here.
So why did you want to do this?
Honestly, just really love the sound of my own voice. I wanted it to be recorded. No, in all honesty, I think there's a little bit of a selfish motivation, I think, for doing this. This is such a cool opportunity for me to be in conversation with people that are doing really incredible work and really being able to learn from them. Essentially, it's just kind of a unique way for me to be able to do that. I also think that the more that we keep a lot of these topics at the front of mind, I think the more impact that we can have. So the more that we're talking about these issues, exposing ourselves to new information, new technology, new ways of doing things. I just think the more that we'll be prepared to deal with all the challenges that are ahead. And I think podcasts are an incredible source of information and are kind of a good way to take all of that in. So it's kind of just bringing this to front of mind and being able to be part of it. I just really, I believe in the necessity of these types of conversations and this work. And I'm just happy to be here.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Glad to have you for sure.
And I hope for you, more fun to do this in a team than it is sort of by yourself.
Yes, I can already tell it's going to be a really fun time. Yeah. I think we will work well together. Yes. So we have an awesome guest today, and he is so excited about everything.
Yes.
That guest is Lars Gilberts. He is the Assistant Vice President of Community Development and Impact at Numerica Credit Union.
I look at his LinkedIn, and he also described himself as a professional dot connector, which I very much appreciated.
I have had the ability to see that in action, and he is really good at taking something you might be talking about and saying, do you know that person way over here? Mm-hmm. And he will send an email and bring people together. He has an art. There's an art to it, and he has refined it. So what stuck out to you from our conversation with him?
I think one of the things that really resonated with me, and we did kind of, you know, ask a question about this too, but I loved how we talked about things at so many different levels. And he kind of opened it up with talking about Tragic of the Commons and just bringing it from the context of a family unit, for example, or a forest, or a community, or an organization. There's just all these different levels that he's looking at things through. And I think that's really helpful for us to think about in this work is recognizing that there are small scale, medium scale, large scale, everything. And I just, that part really resonated with me.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. What about you?
I think what I've always appreciated about Lars is how he can see maybe things that frustrate other people or are kind of issues that need to be addressed that seem insurmountable, and to see, he sees them as opportunities. And there's a little bit of cliche to that, but he transcends the cliche. Mm-hmm. He talks about a lot of the challenges that face us as a community and is able to see through them and see kind of the glitter and the gold on the other side. I really appreciate that. He's really good at catchphrases too. There are a few that I was writing down that I know I will be using in future conversations, like bring a brick, not a cathedral. I think that's just really wise. And I'd invite people who are gonna be listening to really hone in on that part of the conversation. At least for me, that really resonated.
I also think him bringing up restoration in terms of sustainability, like sort of bringing both of those together, was just kind of building upon the sustainability foundation, kind of adding to it in a way that was amazing. And
I think we talked around a lot of the, I don't know if it's critique, but some of the issues I have with the word sustainability. Like if you were to say to someone, let's say you're dating someone, a partner or whatever, and you're like, someone asked how your relationship is, and you were to say, yeah, it's really sustainable. Like that just does not compute. It doesn't sound like it's thriving. It's growing. Mm-hmm. It's, we've had some challenges, but everything's okay. Like there's a stagnancy to sustainability sometimes that, that word really occupies that.
I like that we're kind of digging into that word a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay.
We do it here, and I think Lars does it too. So, Well, should we bring him in?
Let's bring him in.
Okay. Lars Gilberts.
Enjoy.
All right, here we are, season 3 of the Inbalance podcast. We already know we have an illustrious co-host, Kelsey, and we're joined today by Lars. Lars, do you want to say your full name and your title, your newest title, because you're in a new role.
Sure. Yeah, I'm Lars Gilberts, and I'm the AVP of Community Development and Impact over here at Numerica.
It looks like you are on the river. Is that, that's looks like bowl and pitcher. Is that about
it? It is, yeah. A little more water than there is now.
That's true. It's a very, very nice picture. Lars, we've known each other for a few years. And when Kelsey came on as the co-host, I assured her that we're in good hands with you as our first guest, because you are great to talk to. You're a good friend and colleague, and you're a good, solid part of our community. So we're glad to have you kicking off season three.
Happy to be here.
No pressure.
Yeah. No pressure at all. And with that, we have some questions to just have a conversation with you about, to kind of frame up. Do you want to kick us off, Kelsey?
Yes. Lars, how would you define sustainability?
It's a great question. And I've kind of been trying to reflect on it, because I think how I've defined it has changed over time, and how our culture defines it. But so, like, I was a really nerdy kid. And so I kind of stumbled onto the whole tragedy of the commons thing pretty early. And so this thought of, like, you have this common space and you, like, let one sheep out, and, like, that's not a big deal. But if everybody lets their sheep out, like, it can be just, like, completely trashed. And so this idea of something that you can scale up that doesn't have these unsustainable consequences. So it's kind of like using the term in the definition, but for me, what's sustainable is something that you can keep on doing and share it. Because if only a few people can do it, that's truly not sustainable. I think that for me, that plays out in, like, in a family. Like, if you know, so yeah, somebody can kick back and relax, but if everybody kicks back and relax, then, you know, you're not fed, you're not clothed, you're not safe and healthy. And the same thing for a community, a society, and a world. And I think the other thing that I might put into it is that it's not just something that you can scale up, but there has to be an element of restorative, that if there's not some restorative element as part of how we do things, there's always, you know, again, back to that family, we can be good, but there's that last, you know, glass that you didn't wash or whatever. And so, like, the next person has to wash your glass and their stuff. And I think that kind of scales up to communities and countries in the world as well, that, even with the best of intentions, we still leave an impact. So even the best hikers will still accidentally have something fall out of their pocket. And so if we only take care of our own mess, we will still destroy the things that we care about. So things that are sustainable have to be also be restorative. So for me, yeah, that scalability and restoration are elements of sustainability, both on the individual and collective level.
Lars, you said you came to this early. Do you have, like, a story of, like, when you first experienced the tragedy of the commons? Even maybe you didn't know it at the time, but later on you realize, oh, that was this.
Yeah, a couple different ways. So, like, I've grown up having to really adapt. So I've moved, I think, 37 times in 14 areas in 3 countries. Yeah. And so the good news.
Wait, what?
Yeah, I've moved
37 times.
Yeah, that's the best count I can get. I've gone back, and, like, we were moving every 6 months for a while there, but it was in 14 communities. So sometimes coming in and out of those communities, and that's why, like, Eastern Washington, the Pacific Northwest, is kind of one region that was home base for me, that I kind of came back to. And even here, it's. I'm not that old, I swear, but I have experienced this area, even like a picture book, like the snapshot flipping through. I've gotten to see I-90 change its location and different flyovers and homes and forests be completely pulled out. And even that, like, our family, we had 80 acres north of town, and just seeing how farmland gets broken apart and kind of realizing that that's not really sustainable. That like you can't keep fracturing things and still have a whole. So I think that's part of it, just seeing things change over time. Sometimes when you see the change so gradually, you don't notice it. But when you see it even in 6 month increments, you start to notice it a bit more. But then too, just even like I really was a nerd. Like I would read about like what would happen with the, when you look at industrialization of Great Britain and you saw what would happen when countries would go through industrialization and like, man, that really sucks. Like you can't do that. That you see in London, just people, the pollution so thick that people would get lost in the streets, which is kind of almost nowadays now with some of our forest fires. So like if it's intellectual property, if it's use of natural resources, just seeing that historically, just when a few smaller communities, like Great Britain is not that big, but when just they go through an industrial revolution to increase their quality of life, imagine if billions of people went through that same process, like we couldn't survive it. So we have to find a way not to deny people the right to have a better life, but to be able to do it without some of that, the consequences. But even still, like, so I got to serve when I was 16 with the Youth Conservation Corps, and we would be out there and, you know, we want to provide safe access to nature. But after a hard winter, you go out there and you have bridges that are collapsed. You have things that are washed out, no human involvement, but you have things that just change. And so in the end, to be able to keep that trail access, to keep people safe, to not have people then create new trails that then create new erosion, like it kept constant effort, it kept constant work to be able to maintain things. And so, yeah, I would say even before I was 16, but that was some blood, sweat, and tears of like having to replace bridges and clean things up. And yeah, from the abstract to the really practical, I think I got some personal experience with the tragedy of the commons.
Lars, you sort of talked about it in terms of a family and then your own experience and then at a community level and even like at a national level, once you're talking about industrialization. And I'm kind of wondering, like in terms of that scaling, like what are some of the challenges that you see in scaling, like in zooming in on some of those different lenses and then zooming out to some of those larger scales? Like, what do you think are some of the big challenges there?
Well, I think it's a great question. I think I would start with just human nature. It's amazing. Like, and I think we've done more and more study around bias and just how we think. And I think when we look at a pandemic, it's a great microcosm because how many people think of themselves as bad? Very few people think of themselves as bad. And yet often it's because we don't recognize our impact. As we interact with people, we want others to judge us by our intentions, but we judge other people by their impact. And so this comes out in a lot of different ways. And when you, this is like truly like the tragedy of the commons, like broken down into like the core motivations that oftentimes we don't see how our actions impact other people because we have good intentions. But when we see other people, when they cut us off in traffic, we see that they cut us off. They must be jerks. But when we change lanes without signaling, of course, oh, I just forgot to do it. You should give me grace. And so that same thing, like, well, I want to have that vehicle that gives me a little bit more comfort. Well, you know, it doesn't really have a big impact. But when you think of the scale or growing it out, or, hey, you know what, you know, I want my kids to have that same experience that I had growing up. And so I want them to have a big yard. Great. Keep on scaling that up. What does it take to be able to make that work? We don't think of how our good intentions have an impact on other people. So I think that really comes down to it. And it's just, even when you look at, so like a lot of my work is focusing around systemic issues, especially tied to race, racism and gender issues and a lot of these other things. And what I consistently find is that there's very few people anymore that are truly just evil and racist and misogynist and whatnot, but they're really self-interested. And their self-interest, they don't necessarily realize how it impacts other people. And when you create systems that reward certain self-interest over the interest of other people, that's when you create systems of oppression or just negative impact. And so I think when you have things that can't speak up for themselves, it's really easy to promote your privilege over that voiceless person, place, or whatever it is. And so if it is around issues of race, gender, environment, et cetera, when we're not faced with the cost or the consequence, it's really easy to just go back to our good intentions and not even think about the impact. I think for me, like scalability on any of these things and sustainability, it comes back down to people that believe they're really well-intentioned and just not very curious about the impact that they're having. And then how do you reconnect? And that's like the reintegration of our world and people and societies. Like, that's not easy stuff.
Sounds like a nice riff off of, was it Dr. Seuss or who said, who speaks for the trees? I don't know. Yeah. Is it
the Lorax?
The Lorax?
I believe so.
Are we supposed to talk about Dr. Seuss anymore? I don't know.
Sure, his birthday, so I kind of have to, so.
Okay. We must. Lars, what, and this is a big picture question, it's shifting a little bit from sustainability, and we'll probably come back to that. But you are the person who I think can answer this question so well. And the question is, what drives you?
So for anybody that knows me, like, I've got a lot of squirrel energy, and I like to drive that squirrel energy toward helping people accomplish things they really believe in. Man, like, if you want to collect Beanie Babies, man, more power to you. How can I help you collect those for the greatest impact and enjoyment? So I think that's kind of on one level, that's the thing that drives me on a day-to-day, moment-to-moment basis. But on a deeper level, and where really kind of it connects in, is finding ways to make systems more just, equitable, and efficient. My teams and friends that have worked with me over the years, I find efficiency to be incredibly sexy. it drives me. And also justice and freedom really drives me. And it's on both ends of the spectrum. So a lot of people don't realize that right now there are more people in slavery that are enslaved now than at any point in human history. That is crazy. We should be actively aware of that and working on that. So when we talk about freedom and justice for all, at the basic most level, there are more people right now that do not have the ability to make choices to determine their own destiny. That is ridiculous. So that's something that drives me at like the big macro level. But when you bring it all the way down to the small, just like when we're talking about people not realizing how their good intentions could have negative impacts, so many of us, especially, and I think like when you talk about first world problems, I think the biggest first world problem for me is that we give up our power. If we have privilege or if we have less privilege, we victimize ourselves. We give up our power. And I hate that. A lot of my life has been dedicated to helping people see the power that they have and making sure, ideally, that they and the systems that they have influence over don't take people's power away. So if it's working with the family to help them understand that, yes, they may not be able to save $100,000 in the next 10 years, but what can they do to stabilize their family and to be able to give their kids a more stable home life and a brighter future, as well as those that have impact on systems that, you know really well-intentioned employers that say, I really care about my team. I can't afford to pay them more, so I can't do anything. No, you absolutely can. And so in both cases, so oftentimes we have great intentions, but we feel powerless. And so helping people to see that the power that they have to be able to make their lives better, but what really motivates me is to make other people's lives better. Most people have great intentions. They want to do good by their kids, by their community, for their country, for the world. And sometimes we just don't know how we can do it. and or we think that we have to give up all of our own privilege and comfort to be able to do that. And so you can hear me, like I'm passionate about this. And so when I hear just an iota of interest or intention from someone, man, I'm all over that. Yeah, like a squirrel on a nut. Or on the other side, like where someone's like, oh, I can't. Like, oh my gosh, no, yes, you can. That's what really drives me, is helping people to see their freedom and their power, and to be able to fulfill things that they're really meaningful to. Giving freedom and power, man, if we could really unleash that in this world for good, holy cow, what a wonderful place that would be.
Dear listeners, Lars is wildly gesticulating and moving throughout his screen, if you couldn't already tell.
All over bowl and pitcher. Lars, I love hearing the energy come out as you're talking about a lot of this. And so much of it sounds like it's connected to the work that you've been doing and also this new role that you're in now. And we talked a little bit before, I'm going to steal Jim's three-legged stool, but he talked about sustainability being a three-legged stool. And so there being people, planet, and profit, and that profit has sort of been replaced as of late more with prosperity. So a different P. And so looking through kind of that lens of sustainability, how do you see the work that you're doing at Numerica, but also just in the community, or the work that you've been doing in the community, sort of falling within to some of those legs of the stool?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And feel free to bring me back, because I feel like I could just like go off and launch on this one.
Run with it.
So my faith has always been a critical part for me. And so like I come from a Christian tradition where the thought is that you keep your priorities straight by giving a tenth of what you make back as a reminder of that everything that you have is a gift, that you're a steward of it. And so for me, like that really, it drives a lot of how I see some of this work. I think so. Like what I love about like Eastern Washington and the Pacific Northwest area is that there's this balance of pretty strong philanthropy as well as pretty strong kind of conservative, steady business practices. But we often keep these things separate. We're very compassionate and we're, you know, going to keep on with our business, but we keep them separate. And so for me, to really address, you know, prosperity, profit in a sustainable way, you have to bring those things together. If we don't find ways to help people do good while doing well, it's not sustainable. And this is most of my education has been on the for-profit side. Most of my work has been on the nonprofit side. But my passion is where those things come together. So if I've been working with a business or working with a nonprofit, you have to be profitable, which like the joke of you know, for nonprofits, you're not for profit, but you're not for loss either. That if you care about the mission, you have to find a way for it to be able to sustain itself. And the same thing for a for-profit business, that if you just are quarterly minded and short-term gain, that is not sustainable for the business. And if you, and when I look at, you know, as a simple thing as a skilled workforce, if you pay people as little as possible, in the end, you will end up with a community that is not able to create a skilled workforce that allowed you to create the value in the first place. And so you'll go to where there's cheaper labor. And so you just pull out of that community. Like that is not a sustainable thing. So how do you have profit has to be built in. And I think another thing I'd add it is value. You have to create value. And so for me, that goes back to efficiency. If we don't find ways to be able to be efficient so that we have surplus value that we can share, we're not going to make it, because there will be lots of times in life that there are things that just take resources. When you look at natural disasters, man, like that takes resources. And if we don't have an abundance in one area to be able to share, we're not going to make it. So anyway, I feel like, again, I can squirrel, but I think the concept is replicable in a lot of different ways. So one of the things like I love about Numerica One of our commitments is that 5% of what we make goes back to invest in the community. Yes, we're absolutely trying to give good rates of return, something that I love. And I used to be with some online banks and other things like that. And I brought all my accounts over to Numerica is because my money that's just sitting there is making just under a percent return. Like as a member, that is amazing. I want my money to get a return so that I'm not worth less at the end of the year than I'm at the beginning of the year. But I'm also grateful that the money that I have here is being invested back in the community. The first, so the Haystack Heights, you know, that's a, it's a great place that that we care about, that Numerica has supported and invested in. Where are other places that we can invest in our community to make sure that the money of our members is being invested back into the community, making a return so that we can give a return to our members, but also invest back into the community, that we've got a domestic and family violence program, that those that are at their most vulnerable, that don't have somebody to stand up for them, the faster that we can stabilize those families, the better that they can be able to provide for their kids and be able to contribute back to our community. And that comes from profit. If we did not have profit, we could not help stabilize those families. We could not invest in co-housing. We could not invest in refugees that are coming to our community that will add to our economy. It's all coming together. And I think that concept, though, plays out in individuals' lives as well, that if we do not make more than we consume on a weekly, monthly, annual basis, our families are not sustainable. If families do not have profit, this is not a business individual type of situation. If families do not have a profit of more than they need to live, how are they sustainable? We are putting them in a position that they have to rely on philanthropy, you know, a faith community, is the government to be able to survive long term. That is not sustainable at a family level, business level, community level, country level. So I think that concept again plays out. Like sustainability, profit is part of that sustainability because part of it is restoration, and also ideally preparation for the future.
I love that, Lars. I think also about resiliency and how that is something that we're thinking about here at Gonzaga, about how we prepare for an uncertain future, whether it's energy or just emergency preparedness, vulnerabilities to climate change. Thank you for sharing. Shifting a little bit, what are two things that you're excited about? And I know that's a term that's, you're excited about a lot of things. But what are two things that you're excited about that are happening in Spokane that you think are could contribute to maybe everything we've been talking about? But I'm going to challenge you to maybe limit it to two, because that will make you think a little more about like what are those meaty or tofu-y things that are happening.
Well, the good news is I actually thought on that question, because I do want to, you know, squirrel energy is fun in some settings, but you need to focus on it sometime. So the two things I think that I'm most excited about at this moment in Spokane, one is growth. And I know growth gives can produce a lot of uncertainty, but, you know, momentum is something that you can direct. Lack of momentum is really a challenge because it's difficult to create momentum. We're going to be really costly and inefficient, which, you know, that's not sexy. So growth gives us the opportunity to be able to steer. It's like that car that once it's moving, you can steer that movement. And so I think it is a great opportunity, and it gives me excitement because it allows, rather than, again, poverty for me is a mindset more than like you can be broke and not feel poor. And as a community, growth allows us to feel, it can allow us to more readily feel that there's abundance, and we can make decisions that don't feel like a loss of privilege or a loss of my rights. And so I'm excited about what we can do with that. And the other one is COVID highlighted how important local leadership is. How many of us a couple of years ago would have just felt that everything is a national or global issue? And even on issues of sustainability, like, well, man, if China doesn't do X, Y, Z, we're just, you know, we're out of luck. And I think COVID has reminded us that local leadership matters. And so we have seen leadership tested at local level around the world. And we've seen leadership, you know, step up and leadership fail. And that's, I think, that's the nature of being a human. And I think it's really exciting. I think a lot of people have seen the need for it. Yes, people are exhausted, but I think, you know, 10, 15, 20 years out from now, things that the experiences that people have had now, either as followers, seeing leaders, or as people that have, maybe they started out in a very small leadership role, but they have tested their mettle. They have seen what they're capable of. They, like, if we could survive X, oh my gosh, this next thing, no. That's not going to throw me off. I survived, you know, 2021, 22. I can get through that. And so I think I'm really excited about what that has done for empowering new leadership and giving them a strong foundation for the future.
Lars, I'm gathering that the full package for you is efficient and just. Like, those are the non-negotiables for Lars. So to look at kind of the negative side, I guess, of Jim's question, but just being sort of realistic too, talking about what we're excited about, what are some of the things that you're worried about right now, maybe in Spokane, and kind of following suit, maybe two things that you're sort of, that are concerning to you at this moment?
Yeah, I think it's a more overarching thing. And I think this is not just a local issue, but I think we can see it here locally, is that we've fallen really into polarized thinking. And I don't think we can stay like that to get really good sustainable solutions and just communities that people want to live in. And kind of combined with that, like, we're tired, we're uncertain, we're fearful. And for some people in that situation, balance seems like a luxury. And it's interesting, even on, I've had a friend here that has recently given me the dubious distinction of being called a flaming moderate. and I wholeheartedly embrace that, because if I'm with friends or colleagues that are left or right of me, I'm usually trying to invite them to see where there's a balance or nuance, or where might a different perspective help them to see some that issue differently. And so I'm super popular because of that. but so often, it's like right now in Spokane, this question of, is it growth or equity? Is it profitable or socially just? Is it, you know, growth or sustainability? Is it these either or dynamics? Is it right or left? Is it freedom or safety? It's like, what? This is a false dichotomy. These are not the only options. And none of us live our lives this way. So let's get over this. Let's get back to some pragmatic solutions that I think, honestly, we do a phenomenal job at in this community. I when people ask me about this area, I tend to reference progressive pragmatism, that for so long that we were kind of off by ourselves, so we had to figure it out. So we helped each other out, but we also had to make it last and be sustainable. So figuring that out, that balance of opportunism and responsibility, like, man, we have done that so well for so long. And I think if we lose that, I think that it's really concerning.
Yeah, kind of that, the different shifting the mindset from the either or to the both and, as they say.
Yeah.
Reminds me of, like, was it in stand up? You've done stand up stuff, right,
Lars? Improv, totally different.
Improv. It's different. Improv is different. Is that?
I think you have to be more talented to do. stand up than improv. Improv, you have a team, you get to build off each other, riff off each other.
So I think, and I might be butchering this, but I remember going to a conference and there was a session where they described this kind of Tina Fey exercise where you're never allowed to like say no. You have to like say like yes, but, or yes, and. So like kind of that both and piece, what Kelsey said and what you just described reminds me of that. I try to think of that kind of in the work that I do and in life. So yeah, thanks for sharing.
Well, those are, so if I could just quickly note there. So those are rules of improv. And so I actually, if nobody's gone to some, you know, either watch the Blue Door Theater or actually participate in some of the, there's jam nights, there's classes. I went through one of those improv classes. And I think this is, there's these thoughts of life as improv. And so when you take the principles of improv and you apply them to your larger life. And so when you're in an improv setting, just briefly riffing off on this, because I think it does matter for this type of, how do we welcome people to find and explore sustainable solutions and come together, is one, what if you approach things with, if you didn't have any fear? What are the things that you would say, would you do, would you risk if you didn't have a fear? Another one that I love is bring a brick, not a cathedral. How many times do we think that we need to have the whole solution rather than a next step? And one thing in business that I love is the idea of, you know, the adage that if you have 70% of the information you fail to act, that's procrastination. You know, don't let enemy or the perfection be the enemy of the good, and you know, not progress over perfection, like all these, you know, things you can throw around. But it's what I love about improv is the idea that you are working with each other. It's about listening and responding to that. Don't come with a fully fleshed out bit that you have to force, but rather come with a brick, and together with other people, you can build something absolutely amazing that you could have never brought in yourself. And so I think, to your point, I think, yeah, the rules of improv can apply just for relationships, for sustainability solutions, you name it, and takes a lot of the burden off of us, because man, none of us have all the solutions. And how many of us get exhausted because we think we have to? We either burn out or we disengage because we don't have all the solutions, we don't have all the energy, we don't have all the compassion, but we can bring what we have and we can share.
I love that. Well, In Balance Flight, LARS, is coming in for a landing. But we have a few questions for you that weren't shared. I don't think they will cause any problems with any fact checkers or anything like that. It's a new segment of our podcast, like some rapid fire questions. So Kelsey's going to throw some questions at you, and we just want you to respond with what comes to mind first.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Lars, what is a book that you think everyone should read?
Ooh, Nudge.
Say more about it.
So there's so many things, like Talking with Strangers is a great book too, but Nudge, what I love. So like, if I had to identify with a political ideology, what I kind of adopted is from this book. So it talks about paternalistic libertarianism. And so the idea that, like, two kind of triggering terms, like I should trigger warning, right? So like the idea of paternalism, you know, as parents, as experts, do some people know better on some things? Absolutely. We find that people, when we make infrequent decisions, we tend to make those decisions less efficiently, which you know what I think about that. So there are people that are able to make more efficient, more optimal decisions. And so this recognizes that, and it protects people's right to choose. And so it's like, how do we design systems that help people to choose things in their best interest without depriving them of their right to choose? And so it gives examples, everything from public safety of, like you can stripe the roads in such a way that slow people down to make decisions so that they are safer. At a cafeteria, you can not remove the chocolate cake, but put the apples in front of it, and people will choose a healthier option more often than not. So this comes back down to behavioral economics of simple, small things that you can do that allow people to make better decisions in their own interest. And I think there's so many ways that we can create healthier systems that make for healthier people and healthier communities. And so I love it.
I love that. I'm adding it to my reading list. It seems like Jim already has it on his shelf. He just showed all of us. Okay, Lars, what was the last concert that you went to?
Oh, dear Lord. So sad. I think it was Dublin to Delhi at the Bartlett.
RIP.
Exactly. But, actually, no, I went to Lucky You after they moved over there, and actually hoping to get back there fairly soon. Yeah, but still, the Dublin to Delhi, that's the most memorable. If you guys haven't checked it out, man, when you take Indian music and Irish music and you jam it together, some beautiful things happen.
Sounds very interesting.
Wow.
Okay, what is your favorite restaurant in Spokane?
Oh, two of my favorites just closed during this pandemic. I'm going to give a shout out to the Grain Shed because I love them on so many levels. First, their sandwiches are gargantuan. So they're amazing. The bread is amazing, but also just how they do business is impressive. It's a co-op, its own. You know, we talk about estate wines. They're one of the only places in the area, in the world, that have estate beers. So if you want to know what that is, go check it out.
Love that. Shout out to Grain Shed. Lars, how did you get to work today?
I drove my single use vehicle. It's a Prius, but that's how I got here.
No shame. This is a safe space. final question. Okay. Finish this sentence. In 2030, Spokane will
be bigger.
Love it.
So it's going to be bigger one way or the other. What do we want to do with it? What do we want it to be?
That was fun. Thank you, Lars.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for joining us. Is there anything you want to add? Should the guests have the last word? That seems like a good idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I love the question that you ask about where, you know, Spokane in 2030. And I think of, this is hosted by Gonzaga. And I imagine, like, think of all the histories that it's had over the years and the people that built the buildings, walked the campus, never knew the impact that they have. And this goes back to, I think we just don't see ourselves very well. And so I look to, like, you know, 2030, like, whoever's listening to this right now, where will we be in 2030? And will we be proud of what we've accomplished? Will we have grace for us ourselves if we didn't? Anyway, but I just think that the possible, like, there's a lot of great possibilities. How do we think a little bit more long term? Something that I've really enjoyed doing. I thought it was this was not an activity that I thought was going to be super exciting, but I had someone guide me through the idea of talking to your future self, or going forward and be your future self talking to your present. And it's interesting. We do a really great job of loving and caring for other people. We don't always do that great job of ourselves, of loving and caring for ourselves. And sometimes I think putting ourselves in our future self's shoes can maybe be a helpful way to gain some perspective that can give us some coaching, but also some grace. So that would be my final word.
All right. Thanks so much, Lars. Thanks for joining us today. And thanks everyone for listening to the In Balance podcast. We'll be back soon with more exciting guests.
That was fun.